Well, Yvonne Renee Davis, international relations expert at Fox CTE, based here in Connecticut, is one of our special guests this morning. She's been with us before. She is going to talk about the funeral that she attended of Lobigno Brzezinski, President Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. And she encountered the former president, Dan, and talked to a lot of people. Yep. And she's local.
Right, and she's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair. Yvonne, good morning.
Good morning, Dan and Brad. It's so nice to hear your voices this morning. Firstly, I want to send my prayers to Congressman Scalise. This is a nation has to come together at this time, and this is really a top priority here for how we govern and with rules of law and our Constitution. We need to be unified. So,
well, and you know what? We want to get your take on that in just a bit, Yvonne, but explain to our audience, you went to the funeral of Lobigno Brzezinski. He was President Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. Talk about that. Talk about your encounter with yet another president whom
yes.
you met.
Now,
yes.
I understand also, Yvonne, yes. there was a big thing on I saw a shot of the former president flying, and he was shaking every hand on the airplane.
Yes. It was my fifth U.S. president that I met. A quick story, when I was 4 years old, I used to tell my dad when I lived in Cleveland, Ohio, that one day I would fly on planes, meet presidents, go around the world, and be on television. Well, at this age, I've done all of those things. My father reminded me in 2007, at that time, was four U.S. presidents. So Dr. Lobigno Brzezinski, very good friends with Mika Brzezinski, who was started at Fox, the local affiliate here. When she wasn't in town, I would always pick up her father and take him to his speeches at Yale and various places and get to spend time. And I was a grad at the University of Hartford. So he would drill me on international affairs, from Haiti to Russia to Poland, whatever it was. And I was always shaking. My hands were shaking and sweating because he always kept drilling that I needed to make the analysis, the connections, and really go really in depth of understanding how the linkages work. And so he's played a big role in my study and expertise that I have today. And so when he died, of course, I had to be there. And so being there in the midst of some of the greatest national security or international experts in the world coming in from as far as Poland, from NATO, I saw Richard Hawes, so many. But a highlight was to go and speak to President Jimmy Carter, who looks fantastic. Barring any political partisanship, the man looks great. His wife, Rosalind, looks awesome. And so it was really nice to be able just to say it was an honor to meet him and have him with us. And the faculty that he has, when he recalled, when he gave his speaking remarks about Dr. Brzezinski, he just went back as though he was president back then, talking about Cyrus Vance and the issues of China and the Middle East and the role that Dr. Brzezinski played and the influence that Dr. Brzezinski actually had in the Reagan administration. Dr. Brzezinski actually turned down Ronald Reagan for a position. A lot of people did not know that. And so it was really quite an experience. Madeleine Albright was there as well. So I would say President Carter, President Clinton, George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush, who I worked for, as you know, in the administration on various initiatives, and then President Obama. And all of the presidents I've had, the four of them, I've had substantive conversations with them on various issues. With President Obama, we've discussed how to get out of Afghanistan when he was getting ready to run for president in Chicago. So it's just been an honor to be at the seat and at the table in that context and be involved. And so I feel proud as an American citizen to have had those opportunities.
Unfortunately, President Carter, even though a tremendous person personally and everything else, certainly when he was our leader, was not a powerful leader. But again, as a person, everybody says it. Everybody says just a tremendous person.
Yeah, I think that when it comes to, you know, the Begin and Sadat talks and the Middle East peace agreement that he was a part of leading, of which Dr. Brzezinski was very much a part of, I believe that that was one of the few highlights in relation
one of the very few.
Yeah, well, but it was significant because when you look at what's happening today in terms of the relationship between Israel and Palestinian territories, there has not been a whole lot of progress. But yes, in terms of his peacefulness, his religious and spiritual convictions, as it's just really amazing and impressive, and it just shows. I mean. Of the way he, you know, carries himself as an ex-president.
Yvonne, what about Brzezinski? Which position did he turn down in the Reagan administration?
It was a security position. I think they had asked him to stay on. I don't believe it was national security advisor, but there was a position they asked him. I also learned from a PhD candidate, a Persian PhD candidate, that the Islamic Republic of Iran even offered him a position, which he turned down. So, and then, of course, in Poland, there was talk about having him run for president of Poland because he was really second to Lech Walesa. He was a rock star, and he could have gone back to be the president of Poland, but he chose to stay in the United States, obviously. So there were a lot of things that people didn't know about Dr. Brzezinski.
Brad Beckenauer, Touchpoints Rehab Interview Chair, Yvonne Renee Davis, foreign policy expert. People see her, of course, on Fox CT. Yvonne, I want to get back to Zbigniew Brzezinski for just a moment. Didn't he take such a hard line sometimes that it put him at odds with President Carter and aligned him more with some of the conservatives in our country?
Absolutely. He was a hawk. I mean, he was always a strident, independent thinker, but there was a lot of the talking remarks that were said about him talked about him being very convicted and convinced and a viewpoint, and he did not want to change it. And so, yeah, oftentimes that did happen. I think as he got older, he actually became even more vocal. And, of course, some of his positions put him at odds at some of the policy positions related to Israel and Palestine and even with Iran. And so he my last conversation with him was in Pennsylvania. He was an advisor to President Obama when President Obama started to run for office. And he was the first, actually, to come on board as a senior foreign policy advisor to him, to President Obama. And so a lot of what he talked about to the president by them helped shape a lot of his foreign policy thought process in terms of the positioning, the white papers, in terms of moving forward when then candidate Obama ran for office.
Yvonne, I want to change the subject, if I can, for just a moment, because we're hearing an awful lot about it now. And this whole thing with North Korea. I mean, this guy is a real nutcase. He's crazy. We know that. And it just seems as though President Trump, is really after him. He just wants to, and it seems to be encouraging him even more. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that the United States has taken a clear military position by sending our naval ships in the region, so we are prepared. And we always have to differentiate when we're dealing with someone like a Kim Jong-un in terms of him being a rational versus irrational actor on the world stage as it relates to, yes, a nutcase, the words, the vitriol, the things that he has said and the things he has done and the way he's treated his own people inside his own country. But in terms of what he wants, there's still something he wants. And a lot of it has to do with economics. That's why at the end of the day, President Trump has continued to reiterate, my dear friend, President Xi Jinping of China. I know he must be working on some strategy to stop North Korea. And if you start to analyze and look at the style of President Trump, he tends to float it out there to give people the opportunity to make to do something. I think President Xi Jinping is very frustrated. I won't say he doesn't know what to do, since China really has the power over North Korea, but there is sort of a hands-off approach that China still is taking regarding North Korea, but they also know that if there's some military strike, they will definitely inherit a refugee situation that they don't want inside of China. So this, there has to be something that sort of breaks the bow that allows the United States. I think the United States, in the end, still has more power to make a difference. And the key is to be able to really get to what Kim Jong-un really wants, which really has to do a lot to do with economics. Yes.
Yeah, but how's he going to get, Yvonne, how's he going to get the economic help that he wants if he continues to run such a closed, domineering society?
That's the problem.
That becomes the problem, because there's a real human rights issue inside that country. And so then it becomes, that's why the pressure from China becomes also critical as well. But still, you have competing interests. You have the president of China that wants to advance his Silk Road agenda, his big pipeline that he wants to run through Pakistan for oil, and this $900 billion project that he wants to do to sort of supplant where the United States is. So there's there's always this competing these competing interests that are going on at the same time. So at the same time, North Korea becomes important, it becomes unimportant. So it goes back and forth. It only becomes important every time he launches some sort of missile.
Well, do you think that Kim would, I mean, if he does have the capability of an intercontinental ballistic missile, if they pull it off, would he use it against the United States or even Japan?
Oh, I think that he definitely is going to try to hit what's closer to us.
Would he use it? Answer the question. Would he use it?
I think that he would. I think that he would.
Well, then he'll wipe his country off the map.
Absolutely.
Provided he does, he's still threatening. I still think there's more work that has to be done to drill down to really unearth what he's really looking for, and I still think a lot of it's economics. Of course, he wants to be able to have a nuclear weapon.
Well, you've been involved here. What's going on behind the scenes? There's got to be something going on behind the scenes right now with this country, with the United States, China, and even North Korea, and other countries perhaps that have a better pipeline to North Korea. What do you think is taking place behind the scenes?
You know, what's interesting about pipelines, I mean, I'm going to throw something in there that no one's ever talked about before as a consideration. It's Pakistan. When you do the research on Pakistan, Pakistan has sold materials to North Korea. North Koreans come in and try to work on their bombs there. And so Pakistan is in a really, is an ally to the United States. Pakistan is in a critical position to be able to put some influence and to stop participating. Now, the Pakistani government will deny this, but it's a fact that there's that relationship.
So you think they're working behind the scenes on this?
No, I don't think so. I think the United States needs to direct pressure on Pakistan to do something about it, because Pakistan stands to gain in three areas. Please look at the higher level, go 30,000 feet in the air and look at the main agenda. There's a pipeline that everybody wants to do, an oil pipeline. The Russians want to do it, the Iranians want to do it, or the Persians want to do it, and China wants to do it. They all want it. They need to do it through Pakistan.
We're gonna have to wrap it up.
Yeah, Yvonne, we'll talk loaded with information. I can't thank you enough.
Lots of information.
You're welcome.
Thanks a million. We'll get you back down the road. Okay.
Okay. Take care.
You too.